This podcast is supported by JBS International Incorporated through a grant award from the Health Resources and Services Administration, HRSA, of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, with 0% finance with non-governmental sources. The contents are those of the author and do not necessarily represent the official views of, nor an endorsement, by HRSA, HHS, or the U.S. government. For more information, please visit HRSA.gov.
Welcome in to another episode of Rural Roads, the Hardcore Podcast, where we discuss the stories, individuals, and everything else within the rural community's opioid response program. I'm your host, Tim Rabelt with JBS International. Before we get into it, just a quick reminder on some of the ways you could stay connected and informed of all the latest Hardcore information, updates, resources, and more. As always, you can visit the Hardcore TA portal, check out the new modules on the LMS, and keep up with the monthly newsletter and weekly roundup emails. You can also follow us on social media by liking Hardcore TA News on Facebook and following Hardcore TA on both Twitter and Instagram. For today's episode, I sat down with fellow Delawarean Brent Wanniger, the Director of Executive Programs and Grant Administration for the Delaware Division of Substance Abuse and Mental Health. Brent joins to talk about some tips, strategies, and success stories for engaging with law enforcement. It's a really impactful and hopefully applicable conversation that a lot of grantees will be able to resonate with. Let's listen in. Welcome, welcome, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. Got another great episode for you today. I'm here with fellow Delawarean Brent Wanniger. Thanks so much for joining, Brent.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
On your card that you gave me at the RSV and online, your title is long. Can you explain a little bit about the work you do, your current role?
I do. So my formal job title is the Director of Executive Programs, Grant Administration, and the Opioid Response Center here at Delaware's Division of Substance Abuse and Mental Health. So it is a mouthful, but the gist of my job is overseeing a lot of our federal programs and federal grant awards and the dissemination of those awards and program implementation and oversight and reporting and all of those fun things fall to my shop and my team. But one of the ones that falls to my unit is the HRSA R-Corp grant that we received in the Behavioral Health Care Support cohort.
Perfect. And prior roles, what was the work that you're doing that kind of led you to the role that you have today?
Sure. So I actually started off in public education. I was a teacher and an assistant principal for a little while at a first responder charter school, and then transitioned into a role at the state with the Division of Public Health in the Office of Emergency Medical Services. And I was the training administrator over there, overseeing our EMT and paramedic systems, education content and development and certification and processing, which led to our naloxone programs for first responders, which came under me, and then all of our naloxone programs that came under me. And that job just expanded before I moved over to substance abuse and mental health.
Gotcha. And you're not right in Wilmington, right? You're down south a little bit?
Correct. We are just outside of Wilmington.
Perfect. Again, thanks for making the time. So we're going to talk a little bit about integrating, collaborating with law enforcement, EMS. We had that planning call and talked a bit about some of the experiences you've had, and especially the strategies. And for folks tuning in and grantees listening, really applicable and impactful episode that we have for you today. So I guess for starters, literally, where do you think folks should start? For grantees listening and just has no idea that first step to take, or maybe is intimidated and doesn't really know how to even approach law enforcement. Any kind of guidance on that piece?
Absolutely. So I think one of the things that's worked well for us, and I came from first responder background before I went into behavioral health, which is not traditional for a lot of people, especially out of the grant managers that I've spoken to from other states. They don't come from a first responder background. So it's a whole different world. It's a different environment. As many acronyms as we use in state governments and federal governments and behavioral health, there's just as many in the military and first responder fields.
Sure.
So it is definitely two different worlds. And I would say, don't be intimidated. It's a little bit more regimented than the general public. It's a little bit more militant than the general public, which could be intimidating a little bit. But there are definitely some inroads that can be made quite easily and applicable across jurisdictions. So every law enforcement agency is part of a larger consortium, if you will. In some areas, they're called police chiefs councils, police chief committees, whatever the name is. There's typically an organization that agency belongs to. And a lot of times you'll find that some of the agency itself may be a little bit more receptive to concepts or ideas than an individual police chief or an individual municipality might be, just because they see things from different perspectives and different lenses. I think one of the other things to do in most things, you've got to find a champion. There's got to be an advocate with you. If you are not law enforcement, coming into law enforcement and telling them how to do their job is like somebody from law enforcement telling behavioral health how to do their job. It's just not going to work. You're not going to listen to them. They're not going to listen to you. And we've seen that a lot. I saw that a lot, even not just in the behavioral health space, but outside of behavioral health space, that a lot of people that I've talked to, because I'm not a clinician, I don't have that treatment background. That's not who I am. That's not my area of expertise. But people have told me since I've been in this work repeatedly, meet the client, meet the patient where they are. But then they don't do that with other agencies or other entities. And you really have to carry that through. And it's the same concept. The same as you've got to work with your clients where they are and when they're ready. You have to do the same thing with law enforcement and first responders. They may not be ready to integrate with a behavioral health response team. And so coming to them with that idea, oh, you should do this, this is a great idea, you're going to run into barriers right off the bat. That's not what they want to hear. It's not something they're just going to go, oh, yeah, okay, sure, we'll do that. Most of the time, some people will, but most of your agencies aren't going to do that. And I think one of the good ways to approach this is go in with a door opener. And a lot of times people forget that it's that simple step of everybody knows that there is an opioid crisis, an opioid epidemic. But going to an agency and saying, you're in the midst of this epidemic, we need to do something, you should join us at the table and do something, is not a good approach. And I've seen from my own experience and from some other experiences that I've been a part of and have had shared with me, is one of these sort of the lack of a door opener approaches that happen, where they go in with an idea and a mindset or a program or a project that they want to implement and they want to have implemented, and don't ask the agency, the first responder agency, where they are or what they want or what they're interested in. Because I've seen it time and time again where people from both public health and behavioral health have approached the first responder community and said, you're in the business of saving lives. You should know this, and you should be on the same page as I am. And the answer at the end of the day is no, because saving lives is the theoretical concept behind what they do. But operationally, what they do day to day is different. And what the operational day to day concerns are not the theoretical concept of saving everybody's life. There's business concerns, there's operational concerns, there's implementation concerns that they deal with just as any program does. Approaching them with that mindset doesn't necessarily put you on the same level, that we're both in the business of saving lives. True, in theory and in concept. That doesn't mean you have any understanding of operational protocols from one agency to the other or from one side of the house to the other. And so coming in with a different door opener of, we all know that there's an epidemic. What do you see as the issue? You know, what do you see as your biggest problem and barrier to this fight? Is going to be a different response and maybe a surprising response that people don't expect. And one of the things that I've talked to a couple of the other grantees about is the fact that the answer that you're going to get is probably more pragmatic, probably more logistical than this theoretical, too many people are dying, beauty pageant type response, if you will.
Sure.
The answer is probably going to be something like call volume. I can't afford to send an officer back to the same house 14 times in one shift. We don't have that manpower. Or EMS is going to tell you, we're getting burned out because we're going back to the same house again and again. We've got 18,000 other calls that we need to go get to, and we keep getting called back for the same thing over and over again. They get burned out just like anybody else does. And so approaching it with a mindset and knowing that might be the response that you get needs to be part of that conversation, needs to be part of that approach. You need to be okay with that. And if their answer isn't, oh, I want to save lives, and it's, I want to reduce call volume, you got to roll with that. You got to understand that's pragmatically, that's the biggest concern is you're stretched thin, your officers are overburdened, your EMS staff are running six ways to China. They're not able to get everywhere they need to get to, or they're spending too much time on scene and they've got other calls coming in that are piling up that they need to go get to. And so approaching it with an aspect of what can we do to help that? How can behavioral health come to the table and help you reduce call volumes, help you reduce repeat calls for service? How can I help take the most frequent flyer off of your roll? Because in EMS, we call them frequent flyers. These are people that utilize the system a lot. They call 911 every day, all day, multiple times a day. How can I take that burden and that caseload? How can I reduce that for you? How can I minimize the number of calls? Not going to eliminate it, but how, let's be realistic. You're not going to eliminate calls to 911 from this patient, but how can I help minimize that? How can I help intervene? That's going to open that door to that conversation of, okay, let's think about this. Like, how can we do this? How can we work on this? And approaching it with the, you should be at the table and working with me because we both want to save lives, may not do it. So you're going to want something that's going to help with that. I think the other approach that I would take, and this is one that we took with our largest city, Delaware is the size of most counties and some other states. So take that for what it's worth. But our largest city is the only paid fire department in the state. Everybody else is volunteer. And so the paid fire company works very closely with the city mayor and the city police department, and emergency medical services is covered by one of the hospitals that is in the city. They have their own EMS branch. So it's all self-contained. I saw this approach happen where we wanted to expand law enforcement naloxone carry, naloxone program. And we come up with some barriers against the city that we were trying to work with. Just hesitancy. Not, I wouldn't say barriers, but hesitancy. Not a priority. This is already there. Fire department's on scene. They're within 2 minutes of each other. Really, what difference does it make if we carry or not? And the other alternative and response that I got that my health colleagues didn't quite understand was operational security, situational awareness. One of the staff that I talked with, one of the chief's deputies that I talked with, said it's the city life and it changes on a dime and it changes in an instant. And scene security is their primary concern. They need to have their head on a swivel. They need to be monitoring and being aware of what happens and the changing, ever-evolving, changing situation. If they're focused on direct patient care, they're not going to be doing that. And that's a concern because that's officer safety and bystander safety and everything else. And knowing that and saying, okay, I understand that. I get that. Completely get that. We had to change tactic because, okay, in that mindset, you're never going to join a Narcan administration program if that's your primary concern, because I'm never going to be able to solve that for you. So we had to take a different approach and a different tact. And it wasn't about administering to overdose patients and helping the overdose epidemic. It was, look, your city police, you do high-risk warrants in the city on drug dens that may have product around on a table or generally that's exposed. And if somebody flips a table or one of your officers knocks a table over and it goes airborne, your officers may get exposed to something. So wouldn't you rather have Narcan on your belt or in your cruiser as self-preservation? And that kind of flipped the switch on, oh, wait a minute, now we need to talk, because it's no longer a, you're going to do something that's going to change my officer's situational awareness or focus. Now it's, okay, wait, we're talking about something completely different, where we definitely do want to make sure that our officers are protected and that they are able to save each other. So let's explore that. And we were able to do that. And then the street officers, our beat cops, are the ones who actually turned to their lieutenants and said, if we're carrying it for ourselves and we're there, what's to stop us from administering it to the public? And the answer was really nothing. So then they were much more interested in, okay, we could do that. So it became this much more amicable conversation. And then slowly but surely building that relationship up, we now have cooperation with their department and our street outreach teams and encampment teams for homelessness and our bridge clinics. They're slowly starting to integrate and much more interested in those programs that we would have come to the table with from the outset. that never would have gotten us anywhere. So it took about a year to get to that point, but well worth the investment in time to get the result in the partnerships that we have today.
Yeah. Wonderful. Great first step guidance. Well said. So just to recap a little bit, that first part you were talking about is meeting them where they're at, come in there with almost a softer approach and hear them out, listen to what issues they're facing, and then try and find some middle ground where you're not approaching with some transactional request that's where you only benefit, but have some kind of win type of structure so they get help and you get help too.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's important because that's where you're going to find a champion that's going to say, okay, wait a minute, you're not telling me what to do. You're not blaming me for the epidemic or blaming me for not responding, but you actually want to sit down and hear what we have to say and what our concerns are. Okay, let's set up a meeting. Or, okay, I'll take that phone call, because you're going to listen to what it is without accusing them of not being part of the solution.
Yep. Yep. And I know we were talking about it briefly last week, but totally separate from addiction, but it was like fundraising advice, where it was, if you ask for money, you're going to get advice. But if you ask for advice, you're going to get advice, but you might get some money too. And same kind
Absolutely.
Of thing. Like if you get more kind of buy-in and build that relationship, it might go for, you know, a lot longer.
And I think the other thing too is that, and I've seen this with my health colleagues a little bit more often. Everybody does it, but just in that engagement, trying to engage first responders and law enforcement specifically, it's this zero-sum game that we approach it with, where you're either, you're going to buy in and you're going to be part of the solution, or you're not. It can't be that way. You don't do that to your patients. You don't do that to your clients, where you either go to treatment today or I'm not going to talk to you tomorrow. And you don't say that. It's, okay, what do you want today? Where are you at today? Are you ready? You want to talk again later? What step can we make? And maybe it's just as simple as, hey, I've got a meeting every quarter. Do you guys want to participate? Sure, we can participate and just hear what's going on and listen to what you're saying. And then maybe it's they start participating in that meeting. They start sharing their perspective of what they're seeing from law enforcement and drug enforcement side of the house, because they have some good information.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask too, is you didn't share it. You touched on it a little bit, but I always found it fascinating. If you want to get an individual involved in a cause, asking them to be a keynote speaker at your event or join your board, it was something prominent. Sometimes, I don't want to necessarily say ego takes over, but people will show up for that kind of stuff, and then it's almost like they just have to hear about. Yeah.
That's a good point, too. And I think I've mentioned this before, too, when I've talked to other people or other grantees, is that you have to have meaningful contribution. And I don't think that's ego. I think that's just being valued at the table and not just the token, we've got a cop on the board
who
sits in the corner and doesn't say anything and we don't listen to them. That's not going to help you either. But honestly, bringing them to the table and saying, look, you have a different perspective than us. You've got different information than us. Would you be willing to share it with us so that we can talk about it, de-identified and you know, shadowed as it needs to be? But they know information. And even if it's as simple as, hey, if you guys notice a change or detect a change in the street, can you tell us? And we'll send an outreach team and just walk the street. That's where a lot of law enforcement, I think, wants to do good, is we've got this information. It may not be the information you want, but it's part of the picture, and getting that part of the picture, that piece of the puzzle, to be able to say, look, I know where these areas are that are bad. If you're doing street outreach, I can tell you where to go. You may think no, but I can tell you where to go. And even if you already think that's where it should be, take that as it is and say, look, thanks for that outreach. We went there and we got a lot of really good contacts, made a couple of connections in treatment services, got a bunch of people connected to other services that they needed. I think that was really helpful, really beneficial. Thanks for sharing that. And just valuing that connection, just like anybody else. But for some reason, that the health system and the health side of the house doesn't remember that when they engage with the first responders. And I saw both sides, both being engaged as part of that first responder world and being the one trying to engage that first responder field, we tend to forget that. And that tends to be where the relationship sours or the connections go, this isn't worth my time. No, we're not going to do that. And just trying to build that up is time well spent, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, back to rewinding a little bit, I'm on the Eau Claire County, right here in Wisconsin. So we have a task force for the opiate settlement funds, and they have the sheriff on there, and he's involved and speaks up. And yeah, it's great to have, and for the exact same reason you shared about, different perspective, and it's a true part of it. It's beneficial. I wanted to jump in too to, again, you jump to the questions before I even get to them, but the benefits part of a grantee wants to know some of the kind of tangible benefits. If there is successful collaboration, what does that look like? And I think you've already shared a couple of them, but any others?
Well, I think it opens up doors to other involvement and other partnership. And I think this goes back to one of the things that I said before about most of these departments, most of the municipalities have some type of police chiefs association or council or something. And it starts to be a little bit of an ego game. The keeping up with the Joneses, kind of a rivalry that they have with each other. And if you got your foot in the door with an organization, fire, police, EMS, and you're getting some good exchanges on they're sharing some aggregate information, or they're saying, hey, look, we just had 14 calls in the last hour. Something's up, but you might want to walk the street or send your team out or prepare for higher intakes or something. Having that be valued contribution to the behavioral health system, the law enforcement, first responder community is going to start to brag about that with each other, especially police chiefs. They ride each other a lot. And what's that kind of professional rivalry stuff? Guess what we're doing with our local whatever, treatment agency or local behavioral health authority or whatever it is. We're doing some really cool stuff over here. And then it's, well, wait a minute, why aren't we doing that where we are? Like, we could do that. So then you start to get these other agencies that start to join. And I think we saw that with Narcan. We were able to get a couple of agencies that were early starters, early adopters, and then they started talking about, well, we've got it and we administer and we're sharing information back and it's a really good relationship. And then the other police chiefs were like, all right, why aren't we doing it? And they're like, I don't know, just call them and ask and you'll be part of it. So then we started to build the roster that way, because we were doing some really unique stuff. And when we started our police diversion program with the state police, a lot of the municipalities started to pipe up and go, well, wait a minute, if they have that, why can't we have that? And so then it became, for us, it became capacity. Send your referrals to the state police PDP team and we'll still take care of them. I don't have funding or staffing to give you your own, but you could be part of this. And so it started to grow, and we've got that now where a lot of the local jurisdictions that aren't big enough, we got really small towns like anybody else does that have 1.5 officers. They're not going to get a PDP team of their own. They're not going to get a peer social worker team to be embedded with them. They just don't have the volume for it. But they do come across overdose patients that need to get connected to services. And so if they have an avenue and we say, yeah, absolutely, call the local troop barracks for the state police. We've got a team there. They can come help and just take up the caseload. And yeah, absolutely. Then they start to become part of that team and they start to become part of the referral process. And then they're engaged. And then you got your hooks in them. And then they want to be part of more stuff and part of the conversation. So I think it's just that getting some hooks in the door, getting some early adopters, getting some good partnerships, valued partnerships started. And then eventually, other people are going to buy into it. Other agencies are going to buy into it. And the one that you're targeting, maybe 2-3 steps down the line, but you're going to get to them because word's going to get out and that partnership, that rivalry is going to start to ramp up.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Any other low-hanging fruit, like easy wins in terms of, you know, on the list of action items? Hey, definitely get someone represented on the consortium or make sure that you approach law enforcement with X, Y, and Z, and anything like that in terms of, yeah, I guess some of those like easier, quick wins.
I think the easiest win that I can probably offer for other entities, other awardees at state, county, local, individual, provider level is approaching with a question instead of an offer. What do you see as the problem? What do you see as the issue? Can we talk about it and see how we can help? That's going to be probably your biggest opener to some of these first responder agencies and entities to say, look, I want to help you in the way that you need to be helped. And if I can't do that, let me brainstorm, let me think of if there's other resources that I can connect you with or other agencies that might be able to do what you're looking for, let me help make that connection, is going to be your best option. And I think other stuff that might be low-hanging fruit, I think if you're in the naloxone Narcan business and you've got agencies that you're trying to work with that are a little bit more standoffish, I think approaching it from a provider safety standpoint instead of a patient safety standpoint is going to help, because that's definitely worked for us. It worked for a couple other people that I shared that with. And then I think that valuable contribution, whatever it is, if they're on a consortium, even if it's just a call to say, hey, look, I know you guys have some really good information about what's going on in our area. Can we set up a call once a quarter and share with me? Because law enforcement and EMS do data analytics like nobody's business. Crime reports and crime stats, and every agency has a feed up to a fusion center of some type that's all intelligence information gathering. They've got that infrastructure down and they've got it existing. So they have access to a lot of that intel that they're not going to share everything with you, but there are pieces of that where they can. And I think valuing that contribution as, wow, this is really new information. This is something we've never expected. Even if it's just to prepare, we engaged as a state, for the other state entities out there, we engaged with our deputy attorney generals and the attorney general's office when we did pill mill shutdowns. Provider who was overprescribing and not following best practices and was just handing out opioid prescriptions, and the state came in and shut them down. It wasn't us. It wasn't behavioral health. It was another part of the state that did that. But we don't get tipped off, but the day it happens, right after it happens, we'll get a notice that, okay, look, we just did this. We just shut down this practice in this town. You might want to move some resources to that area or do some outreach or send some mobile outreach teams or vans to that area for the next couple of days, just to make sure people get connected and we've got a safety net there should we see a spike in overdoses, which we do when you do that kind of thing. I think even just that value add that the first responder field can provide to a behavioral health entity of whatever type, I think is a really easy win to establish.
Yeah, thanks for that. And someone listening, they got a lot of good strategies, success stories, tips. Anywhere else they could look online or anywhere else you would point them to if they're looking for additional resources or where to learn more or hear anything similar?
That's a really good question.
And hopefully the podcast covered it. You got a lot of great things that you covered in the episode.
I don't know. I say, and I'm trying to think. Like, I didn't pull on any.
A lot of it, you just got to
external reason
through it.
Yeah. It was a lot of my experience having been on that side of the house and knowing what the priorities were. Shopping the approach really helped. I'm willing to help any agency that reaches out. They can reach out to us, and we'll definitely sit down and help them out. I don't have anything posted like that we might think about doing that now that you said that, but.
It is a little abstract. No, I don't appreciate it.
But no, I don't have anything off the top of my head that I would suggest. If you're not sure of who your contacts are or who to reach out to, I think searching for those councils or police associations to say, look, where's the group that we can approach? Those are searchable. And then EMS has the same thing. Fire and EMS typically together have the same thing that you can do. And then every state has an Office of Emergency Medical Services. So if you're really stuck, you could reach out to
go there,
see if there's an avenue from the state level to make some introductions or some engagements. That wouldn't be a bad idea.
Good to know. That about does it. Anything else you want to add? Any Delaware brags or upcoming things you want to highlight?
Yeah, I think the HRSA grant specifically has allowed us to do some hyper-focusing on some populations of need that we haven't been able to penetrate into. Closed communities and just culturally closed communities and societies that we haven't been able to dedicate some resources to. And so I would encourage some of the other grants, outside of developing partnerships with your first responder communities, is really look at your general population and the communities that you have that are really difficult to reach and difficult to get into. and use some of the HRSA funding to try to do that in those rural areas, because they are disconnected. Everybody's got that same problem in our corp, that you've got a large amount of land and very diffused services and people and populations. And so you develop these little pockets. And we've been able to do a lot of really good work to open those pockets to get a foot in the door. I think not just first responder relationship building, but doing that with some of the local populations has been really good for us.
Great. Thank you again, Brent. Appreciate you making the time for joining today and sharing some of those tips and strategies and stories. Yeah, appreciate
it. I can do to help.
Wonderful. And for folks listening, thank you for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time.